morning, everyone. I'm going to ask our marshal to call court to order.
The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Schmidt, Judge Flore, the Honorable Renee Werke presiding.
Thank you for appearing today, counsel, on our Zoom platform, April 9, 2024. We do have three cases that will be presented by this oral Zoom platform. We have additional non-orals that we also have on our calendar today. I believe both of you have been in front of the Court of Appeals before. Despite our Zoom platform, the rules will remain in place. Each of you has 15 minutes for the presentation of your case in chief. 5 minutes is always reserved to appellant counsel for rebuttal if you choose to exercise that. Our marshal is our timekeeper. It appears on my upper right. I'm not sure where it is on your screen. If there's any technology issues that surface, please wave your hand or wiggle or say something. Otherwise, if you're not speaking, I'm going to ask that you remain muted. One last thing, please state your name and the party you're speaking on behalf of before making your presentation. With that said, appellant counsel, you have the floor. Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't have our marshal call the case. Call the case, please.
Case number A240067 in the matter of the civil commitment of Leah Graber.
Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jennifer Tone. I am the attorney for Leah Graber, who is the appellant in this case. Ms. Graber was committed as a person who is mentally ill and dangerous, and she currently resides at the security hospital but in the secured perimeter. The hospital filed a petition seeking authority to impose electroconvulsive therapy, or ECT, on Ms. Graber. She is adamantly opposed to that therapy and has never received ECT in the past. After a contested hearing, the trial court granted the petition. At issue in this appeal is whether ECT is reasonable and presently medically necessary. I hope to address 2 points in this argument this morning, one being the efficacy of ECT as the evidence demonstrates in this case. And the second is the notion that the hope ECT will help Ms. Graber receive a reduction in custody. And I think before we get to those 2 points, we have to start by looking at how Ms. Graber is currently functioning. The trial court found, all of which is supported by the evidence in the record, that Ms. Graber is articulate and intelligent. She is functioning very well in her current setting. She's independent with her activities of daily living. She attends all of her treatment groups and works at the hospital. Ms. Graber has achieved the highest level of hospital grounds privileges, meaning the most freedoms available on the campus. She utilizes those without GPS monitoring and without issue. Ms. Graber also participates in community outings with staff without issue. Notably, the trial court also found that there is no medical or physical emergency that requires ECT.
Well, then did we end up in this situation where you have a second appointed examiner who also agrees and recommends ECT? I mean, that's your hurdle. That's a very large burden. You have no expert testimony or evidence that this would not be a benefit to her and not follow the Price-Shepard fact.
Sure. And my understanding is that the position essentially is that ECT is the last medical option that will hopefully allow Ms. Graber to leave the hospital. And I think, again, when you look at the evidence on the efficacy of ECT in this case, and then how speculative is it that ECT will actually result in improved odds for a reduction in custody? So in this case, you're right, the court relied on the opinion of Dr. Robin Bellina, who is one of the court-appointed examiners. And what we have in the record is that the benefits of ECT are not robust. And they are even lower for patients who have long-term delusions like Ms. Graber. So at best, slightly less than 50% of patients will see slightly less 50% improvement. And I think when you look at the other case law and the examples, I cited the Tefera case, I'm probably butchering that name, in the brief. It's a drastically different scenario, right? In that case, we have a patient who's described as being quite regressed behaviorally. and in a near totally incapacitated condition. That patient was previously treated successfully with ECT and was not opposed to ECT. In that case, the examiners opine that the patient had a 70 to 80% chance for improvement with ECT. Ms. Graber's case is drastically different. She has not regressed behaviorally. She is not incapacitated or even close to it. She's not aggressive. She's not assaultive. She's not catatonic. She is functioning well. She's not a danger.
She's on medication now, right? My concern is we have an examiner that says when she's not medically compliant that she profoundly decompensates. What's the assurance we have that she would be medically compliant?
She's subject to a Jarvis order. And so she's being forced to take the neuroleptic medications, and she's in the hospital setting where that's closely monitored. And so, you know, and that has been the case for a number of years where she is medically compliant. And again, whether or not ECT is granted, Ms. Graber will remain in the hospital. There's a completely separate court and statutory process for her to obtain a reduction in custody, you know, and that has nothing to do with ECT. And I think that's, you know, the other point that I wanted to make in terms of it's speculation, right? So we know from the Kinzer case that speculation as to something that may happen in the future is not sufficient to justify the use of ECT presently. In Kinzer, the concern was about a future relapse. In this case, we have a hope that a reduction in custody may be obtained. And I think that's far too removed, and there's not enough certainty there to say this is reasonable, presently medically necessary, or necessary to preserve Ms. Graber's life or health, all of which I believe are required in order for an ECT order against her wishes to be granted and to be upheld.
But counsel, would you agree that our analysis is, we have to follow the Price versus Shepherd factors?
Yes, I believe you have to look at those Price v. Shepherd factors, but I don't think that's the only thing that you're bound to look at. You know, we know from the rest of Price and Kinzer and from the statutes that it has to be reasonable, presently medically necessary. You know,
but isn't that within Price? It says the court must determine the necessity and reasonableness of the prescribed treatment. And then it goes on to say, here are the factors you should consider when figuring out whether it is necessary and reasonable.
I think those are the factors that the court must consider, but I don't think you're limited to that. And I think Kinzer is a clear example. So Kinzer, and the Court of Appeals in Kinzer reviewed the Price factors, but then also determined that ECT was not presently medically necessary. So I think courts have to consider those Price factors, but I don't think that's the be all end all. I think you have to also look at the other requirements and the procedural protections that are in place because we're looking at, you know, the constitutional privacy concerns in this case. And I think, you know, and I'm not sure that I clearly articulated this very well in the brief, but I had cited to Minnesota Statute 253B.03, Subdivision 6, Paragraph B. You know, and I think why that's important is because not every kind of therapy or treatment or procedure can be enforced on a patient against their will, right? It has to be, according to that statute, necessary to preserve their life or health. And I was trying to come up with an example that I hope is helpful. And here's kind of what I thought of. So if I'm a committed person, I have a mental illness, and I have high blood pressure. And if my doctors are strongly suggesting that I take medications for both of those conditions, I still can refuse. In that scenario, the hospital could file a Jarvis petition and try to obtain a court order to force me to take the neuroleptic medications. But those are limited to neuroleptic medications. Not every mental health medication is considered a neuroleptic. And they can't force me to take blood pressure medications, right? So there's still limits on authority about what can or can't be forced. And I think kind of relating that to Ms. Graber, in this case, what we're doing is forcing ECT with the hope that a different court, when considering their own statutory factors and criteria, might rule in her favor about something in the future. I just think that's far too removed. And while the intent is certainly understandable, you can't just say, well, we all think this would help Ms. Graber, and so we believe it needs to be done and we're gonna do it. And so, you know, I think, and then you go back to the point of, if Ms. Graber does not have ECT, What happens? Exactly what's happening now. She is functioning well in her current setting. She's going on outings. She's participating in various treatment activities.
That is true. And that finding, that determination was also made by the judge in this case. So we're at a situation where we don't reweigh evidence. We also then have a judge going on to say that she's not competent to make a decision as to what's in her best interests therapeutically. And that's what I struggle with, is we can't second guess and reweigh the evidence, despite the fact that your client opposes it, her family opposes it, because of the findings of the district court. How do we get around a determination that she can't make that decision for herself?
Well, and I'm not challenging on an appeal that she has that ability to make that determination. I think it is, within the district court's discretion. However, I think when you look at the clear error standard and you look at the evidence here, and I completely agree, I'm not asking to reweigh evidence or any of that kind of stuff. But again, you have to find presently medically necessary, reasonable, necessary to preserve life.
Would you say Kinzer is a case that is most favorable to your client's position if we follow the logic in Kinzer?
I think Kinzer. I also think the Tefera case. Those are probably the two most helpful cases and on point. And again, I think you have to look at the evidence in this case. And when we're talking about the likely success here, right? ECT, the best possible outcome for my client takes, it's less than 25%, right? So first of all, she has to be lucky enough to be in the 50% of patients that respond. And then secondly, she has to be lucky enough to have up to a 50% symptom improvement. But those odds are even more significantly decreased given her symptomology and the opinion from Dr. Bellina that for someone with her symptomology, those odds are even lower. Comparing that to Farah, for example, 70 to 80% chance of success. Is that really reasonable? Is that medically necessary when she's not going to die? She's not going to be catatonic in a hospital bed or a wheelchair. She is going to continue functioning well if this is not provided. And I think, and that's the issue. That's the main point that I'm trying to make. We're not the typical ECT case. And I'm sorry, Judge, you look like you had a question to Tori.
Well, I've been listening very closely to your argument, Ms. Tone, and neither in your briefing nor your argument are you claiming that the court here clearly erred in any of its findings. There's evidence in the record to support its findings. It seems to me your argument is that even with those findings, the state has not met its burden of showing by clear and convincing evidence the reasonableness and necessity of the treatment. And that's an issue that we as an appellate court review de novo. Is that a fair synopsis of what your argument really is here?
I think that is a fair synopsis, and that's probably a lot more articulate than I was trying to get out here today. So I appreciate that. I think that is probably the best way to put it. And I do agree that is a de novo standard. And what I was trying to say with the clear error piece, at the end of the day, this is a legal determination. And the court certainly uses the expert opinions to guide and to help them understand the evidence, but they're not bound by those opinions. And so I think, certainly applying the evidence on the de novo standard, I don't think the clear and convincing evidence is met. But also, if you're looking at the clear error standard, again, really focusing on Ms. Graber's current presentation and what would happen without ECT, I don't think you can meet. And I do think it's a clear error to say it's reasonable, presently medically necessary, or necessary to preserve.
Isn't that focusing on just one of the factors, though? Like talking about whether how it might improve her current state, that just goes into one of what is six factors. And if the other five factors are against you, what do we do with that?
I don't think any one factor is dispositive, I guess is my understanding. And it's there's not a lot of case law to help, but that would be my response, my position is no one factor is determinative or dispositive. And I think you have to consider everything. And at the end of the day, because we're dealing with a constitutionally protected right, I think to me, that seems to be the more important consideration, certainly with some of the advances with the medical procedures process, You know, it's not as archaic of a procedure as it used to be. So certainly, you know, a lot of those factors in Price are less concerning today than they probably were 40, 50 years ago. And so to me, the more important things are, you know, is this a reasonable decision to force this on a patient who's not consenting? Is it presently medically necessary? Is it necessary to preserve her life or her health? And so I hope I answered your question, but that would be my response to that. I'm just about out of time. I guess one kind of final point, the county doesn't directly say this in their brief, but they kind of hint at, you know, because of the advances in the procedure of administering ECT, it's somehow not intrusive. And I guess I just want to point out that, you know, it's defined in the statute that ECT is considered intrusive mental health treatment. And just because, you know, some of the pain associated with it and the close medical monitoring during that procedure is all in place does not make it any less intrusive. I think it's still one of the most intrusive things that we can do, shooting electricity into somebody's brain and not really understanding how or why that works, I think is concerning. And so I just wanted to kind of make that point and I'm just about out of time, but if you have any last questions, I'm happy to answer those. Thank you.
There's not, but you will have your 5 minutes rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you.
And we'll turn to you, Ms. Beerworth.
Thank you, Your Honors. Good morning. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jessica Beerworth, and I represent the respondent in this matter this morning, Dakota County. I have 3 points for the court to consider from the onset, and then I do plan to get to a response on Kinzer, Your Honors. But the 3 things I would like the court to consider before we go further is that ECT is not what it was in the horror films and the movies that we once saw. It is no longer something of that nature. I don't disagree that this is an intrusive treatment. This should not be taken lightly, but it is not what those images we may have or may have been portrayed many years ago. There has been significant medical advancements. And if you look even at the report of Dr. Bellina, she even specifically talks about how minimal, if any, responses a person may have and how they are medically monitored and the like. But I will let you I will let you take a look at that at your convenience. So ECT is not what it once was. Second, Your Honors, is I want to remind the court that appellant has made it abundantly clear that she does oppose ECT and that she is raising it as a constitutional issue in a sort. But I want to remind the court that Ms. Graber's opposing of ECT is in itself based in delusions. Dr. Bellina specifically talked about that. Dr. Bellina weighed how she prefers to consider if a person wants to accept this treatment or not, and the further based their unwillingness to accept the treatment, the further based it is in denial, or excuse me, in delusion, the more likely the doctor is to recommend it. So that being the starting point, another starting point. And the third starting point, Your Honors, is this has not been a rush to judgment. This has not been something where they can try something else or where they haven't fully vetted another form of treatment. It has been not a month, not a year. It has been a decade, over a decade, that they have been trying to treat and address Ms. Graber's delusions. And as Dr. Bellina indicated in her report, Ms. Graber presents with the same delusions she had 11 years ago, where she does not believe that she killed a 10-year-old child. She believes that she is God. So we're also in a situation where she is in an institution that is required to treat her. They are supposed to be making steps to ensure that she is making some sort of progress. And all of the experts, the professionals have said, this is a last resort, and we are now at that last resort. In regard to Kinzer.
So bear with me. Can you, the facts of the case, even by Dr. Bellina, suggests that this is a bit of an outlier. You know, she put her caveat in the report. And can you point to any appellate authority or similar case where the court has had to wrestle with this issue of someone who's otherwise functioning just fine in their current setting but isn't going to improve much beyond that, apparently. I mean, both of you have talked about, you know, the facts, but nobody's arguing that the district court erred in any of its findings. It seems to me this is an argument about whether it constitutes clear and convincing evidence. And this case just seems to be an outlier. I mean, is this what the state hospital is doing in similar cases? Why aren't we seeing this? Why is this now coming up seemingly for the first time?
Your Honor, I will absolutely acknowledge that this is a unique case. I cannot find another case in my research that has been similar to this. I think that in terms of what the state hospital is doing, you don't have that before you. It's not something that's been seen on appeal before. So I think that this is the first time, and the district court acknowledged that. Dr. Bellina acknowledged that. And still, upon analysis, came to the conclusion that I submit to the court is supported by clear and convincing evidence that, in fact, this is necessary and reasonable. Turning then
to agreed, and this is kind of what I'm a little hung up on or concerned about. You know, in your brief, you say, I think on page 5 and 6, that the district court acknowledge that the efficacy is uncertain, but that ECT will likely improve the mental status, which may improve the likelihood of getting an order to leave the hospital. And then later in finding of fact 27, it said, as everybody here has acknowledged and isn't really challenged, the most optimistic prognosis or outcome is slightly less than 50% of patients will see slightly less than 50% symptom improvement, and long-term delusions are even less likely to respond. You know, it's more likely than not that she's going to see no benefit from this. How does that equate to a clear and convincing evidentiary standard that the court had to find that this was reasonable and necessary?
I think, Your Honors, one part of doing that is the court considering everything else that has been tried and determining that this is the next piece of what should be tried. Yes, though I agree with the court completely that that is what the district court recognized and acknowledged, but I don't think that that in itself, the likelihood of success weighs in such a way that it is prohibitive of this court still reaching the conclusions that it reached as outlined in its order. Turning next to Kinzer, and the distinction, Your Honors, I believe in Kinzer is when you look at that case, that's a Hennepin County case, where what the court was talking about in its immediacy is there, when that order was issued in Kinzer, there were two orders issued. The first order was a hearing. There was an order issued. The second order was an ex parte order that the court issued and just said, just in case there's a relapse somewhere down the road. That is not our current situation. We're not guessing for somewhere down the road. We considered, also to note, in Kinzer, one of the issues was that it was an ex parte order. I think I mentioned that. In Kinzer, they weren't looking at the current circumstances. This court did look at the current circumstances and did still make this determination and find the necessary and reasonableness. So I don't think Kinzer for that point as to the immediate need is at all on point in terms of Ms. Graber's circumstances and what the immediacy of that is characterized as.
With that in mind, the problem we have is examiner Bellina said there's no bright line as far as what is medical necessity. And I read Kinzer as limited as it is, and I compare the situation here where the examiner opines that this is a person, in her opinion, who would rather indefinitely stay in a hospital setting versus taking this risk. And isn't that her choice?
Well, the problem is, Your Honor, what you said at the end there, isn't that her choice? That is the question that was clearly answered and not even challenged in this appeal. to a certain extent, that's not accurate. It is not her choice at this point.
Choice because she's not competent to make a choice?
Yes, Your Honor. That is what the court found, is she's not competent to make that choice. So while, again, the doctor still appropriately engaged in that conversation, weighed that factor for her, the doctor explained why, the doctor even explained her thought process around it. Like I talked about earlier, about how the further they are in the delusional belief of refusing the ECT, the more likely the doctor is to recommend. But that is overridden, Your Honors, by the fact that she's not competent to make the decision. That's why we were before the court. That was one of the first things that was determined out of the gate. And clearly this court can understand why an individual who does not recognize that she caused a death, who believes that she is God, and I won't even list all of the other delusions that are outlined in those reports, she's not competent. It's not her choice. That is unfortunately where we are at, where she is at. So with that in mind, and having looked at this and distinguishing that, Your Honors, that's why I believe that there is, again, clear and convincing evidence, as this court is required to review, that in fact, the district court's conclusions are supported by the evidence.
So there is a degree of speculation here, though, where it's under 50% that this could improve her. If everything else were the same, but the expert reports were, well, it's 2% likely that it will improve her, are we still in that same boat? Is that something like, how far under 50% do we have to go before we say, yeah, that we're now in Kinzer land where we're engaging in speculation?
Well, I would do two things, Your Honor. One, I would say there's also a 50% likelihood she's going to get better. So turning that a little bit, and I don't know that the court can put a mathematical equation to it, because the district court is then considering the other factors. And as Dr. Bellina completely acknowledged and even considered, she said, yes, those are the likelihoods, those are the percentages, but in this case, it is still worth trying, is really where she came down on this, with good reason and logic behind it. And that was where the district court relied on those opinions, and specifically articulated in its order how it was giving great weight to those opinions, because that's what we have to rely on in this circumstance, given Ms. Graber's very, as I said, acknowledging very unique factual situation that the district court and now this court is reviewing.
So, Ms. Beerwith, at the hearing in this matter, or let me start with this, am I right in my understanding of the order that if this goes forward, Ms. Graber will receive 30 initial treatments, 3 a week for 10 weeks, and then maintenance treatments after that, which would result in her being involuntarily anesthetized 3 times a week for 10 weeks for this initial treatment. Is that a fair reading of what the treatment will involve?
Your Honor, I think that is a fair reading. I would actually refer the court back to Dr. Bellina's report that actually did a great job of detailing that. And if I can find the page here, but yes, I don't dispute.
And I guess my ultimate question was that addressed by the district court, or was there evidence at the hearing as to whether or not that course of treatment is reasonable? I mean, I don't know. I mean, as it fits into this whole clear and convincing evidence analysis that we have to do.
Judge, I'm really sorry, but I'm going to have to ask you to repeat the first part of that question. It cut out a little bit for me. Sorry.
Yeah, I just wondered if that whole issue is to the nature of the course of treatment here, and that's being recommended and would be allowed by the order, if that was specifically addressed at the hearing by the district court.
Your Honor, it was addressed in the, I believe, the testimony. It was confirmed, I think, by myself and by Ms. Tone, that was in fact the recommendations, and that the Dr. Bellina supported that particular course of treatment. Without going outside of the record, I can tell the court that it's, well, going outside of the record, I can tell the court that it's not an unusual course of treatment. And I doubt Ms. Tone would disagree with me on that in terms of what is administered in these type of situations. So hopefully that gets to the question that the court had. I see I'm running short on my time, Your Honors. I do just want to reiterate where I started on this, that in being specifically that Ms. Graber, unfortunately, is not in a position that this is her choice any further, and that the district court's evidence is supported as required by the clear and convincing evidence contained in the court's record upon a very diligent review by the district court and a very diligent review by the district court of the all the factors, the uniqueness of this case, and the weight it gave to Dr. Bellina's testimony. Your Honors, I have nothing further. Absent any other questions from the court, I will be seated or hit mute.
Ms. Beerworth, we'll turn back to you, Ms. Thone, for rebuttal.
Thank you. I just have a couple points. And, you know, Ms. Beerworth said, asked the question, you know, is ECT worth it? And I think that ultimately is the question. And, you know, and that's where I turn back to the, is this reasonable and presently medically necessary given Ms. Graber's unique circumstances? And I think Your Honor said it best when you look at the evidence. Certainly you can understand everyone wants what's best for Ms. Graber, but that doesn't mean it can be forced upon her by a court or a hospital. And I think in this case, you know, on that de novo review, the evidence is not clear and convincing that those two requirements are met, which I assert again is are the most important ones given some of the advances with the medicine. I would also just note for the record, you know, the testimony was also that long-term delusions are generally fixed and they're pretty medication or treatment resistant. And I believe Dr. Bellina even testified that even ECT is unlikely to touch those. So again, when you think about the efficacy of treatment and what you're hoping to do in a different court, I just don't think that these circumstances, these facts, this situation can support the conclusion that ECT is both reasonable and presently medically necessary. I'm happy to answer any other questions if the court has them, but those were the only two points I wanted to reiterate. Thank you.
Appears there's no questions. Counsel, thank you again for appearing. The matters were well briefed and they were argued very effectively this morning. We know that this is a serious concern. The matter is submitted and a decision will be issued in the statutory time frame.
Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honors.